Welcome back to JK Moto Podcast, a motorcycle podcast for the everyday rider, covering current bike and racing news, specializing in track days, club racing, and great entertainment. We truly do it all. This episode is brought to you by JK Moto Entertainment, your one-stop shop for all your motorcycle track day and club racing questions and answers. Subscribe on YouTube and follow us on Facebook and Instagram at JK Moto Entertainment. And as always, you can find the podcast not just here on YouTube if you're watching. If you're not watching and you're listening, go check out the YouTube channel. If you're watching and you don't want to stick around for an hour to an hour and a half of great motorcycle conversation that you have to sit down and watch, we understand that 100%. And so you can definitely 100% go check us out. You know, iHeartRadio, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Amazon. The list goes on. I don't even know them all. Personally, I just use Spotify. Spotify's a good one. I either use Spotify or iHeartRadio myself. But go check us out on any of those platforms. We are all over. Give us a follow there, and leave us some reviews. We'd like to hear it. So, without wasting too much time with the self advertising, we're going to bring on a special guest tonight. His name is Ant Lee Terry, and I met this guy through a Facebook page. Quite honestly. he reached out to me and we had a bit of a conversation and decided, hey, let's get him on the podcast. And I do have to be upfront and honest. We did have some technical issues the first time we filmed. So tonight might be a little bit of a repeat for us. Hopefully not for you guys. We'll try and keep that out of it as much as possible and stay as live as we can, since it does say live with JK Moto Podcast up in the corner there. So anyway, I'll give him a quick introduction and then we will roll an intro and then we'll get him on. So here we go. Ant Lee is a California-based motorcycle racer, recently winning championships in the Expert 300 Superbike and Expert 300 Super Sport for the 2024 season. Despite only 3 years in the sport, his passion and hard work have driven him to the top. At 55 years old, Ant Lee proves it's never too late to chase a dream, while also showing that success in racing comes from mitigating risks and investing in the right places. A key factor in his success is his dedication to giving back to the racing community. He founded Tip In Racing, a company focused on supporting racers, and he also runs the Racer 411 Mentorship Program with the California Road Racing Association, helping guide and inspire others in the sport. So that is Ant Lee, and we will go ahead and get him on here so he can join us and have a great episode. So stick around after the intro.
My first track day, I got the pictures back, and I was like, I'm never doing that again. On the ground at 100 miles an hour.
Guess we'll start off with basic question here. One, what bike are you currently looking to race? Let me back up a little bit. 2025. When does your season start? Curious over there with the CRRA.
First time I'll be at the track this season will be February 21st.
Okay.
Be a Friday. That'll be a practice day, basically shake the cobwebs off and go racing Saturday.
There you go. Okay. So you guys don't have, I mean, I don't know when it ends exactly, but it sounds like you don't have too short of an off season.
This season was, we wound up having to scrap the CRA had to scrap the final round. Okay. Due to track conditions where we were scheduled to be. So we took a survey and the riders kind of all voted to just say, yeah, we'll call it a season. So we called it a season, and that made our final round, I want to say June, but I could be mistaken.
Okay. So you guys kind of close up before the...
Yeah, our final round was supposed to be in October. So normally that's when we'll see... The last race of the season normally is in October.
So do you just have like a large break there?
We get the hottest months that we take off, usually July, August. The tracks that we normally ride, they're just brutally hot.
Yeah.
So, you know, 105, 108. Jeez. It gets rough. yeah. I mean, if you can train for it a little bit, the conditions don't affect you too much. Just drink a lot of water.
Yeah, there you go. Well, stay especially hydrated. out there in the desert, there's no water yeah. around to help you out. So,
oh yeah, you're in trouble out there. Everything. Yeah,
I've done a couple track days in July in Utah, and I don't know. I think the one time we did get over 100, it wasn't till late in the day, but the morning was fine. Like, morning was perfect. As soon as we took that lunch break, anything afternoon was, oh man, it was rough. It is hot. It is dry. And I get this bad habit of keeping my eyes open. Like, I don't blink out there. I have to remind myself to blink.
Dry.
Yeah. And there were also two vents right on the top of my helmet that just directed the wind straight into my eyeballs. Ugh. And yeah. Anyway, if you're not from the desert, it's a different beast. So
yeah. Yeah. Everything, like I said, everything dries out. You, if you don't keep lotion on your hands, mm-hmm. you'll just start cracking all over the place. I was sticking bloody fingers into my gloves last year at the podium Oof. Club. So yeah, it was my hands hurt so bad after each race, but, had to just go for it each time. So,
well, there you go. And then in and out with a championship. So apparently it was worth it.
Being stubborn. Yeah. Sometimes it helps.
All right. Well, do me a favor. Remind me what tracks you're racing with down there at CRA.
This season we will be at Buttonwillow, Las Vegas Motor Speedway, and then the new circuit at Buttonwillow.
Okay.
It's a new circuit track, and then also back to Willow Springs.
Okay. All right. So you're not heading over to Podium Club this year then?
No, this year we're going to skip Podium Club. Had more interest for Las Vegas Motor Speedway. So,
okay,
it's a fun track. I've ridden there. It's we're going to run a different configuration than I did when I went there, but it's a fun track.
Yeah, I've definitely heard good things about Vegas. So that just kind of makes me curious. Do you guys like? I mean, that's a bit of a trip for you. Compared to Buttonwillow and Willow Springs, depending on where you are, obviously in California. But is that something that you just kind of pick like one per year? Where CRA will travel out of their normal area? Or
so far, that's been the norm. Okay. But I think that the organization is always looking to do what's good for the sport, right. What's good for the riders. And if the riders say, hey, we want to do this or go here, and it makes sense, then the CRA is going to listen and follow suit, you know? So
okay.
It's an amazing race organization to be a part of. So,
well, good deal. Good deal. Well,
yeah,
so
they make you feel like you're actually racing. So,
oh, there you go. Well, let's step back a few pages. I know, you know, in your bio, you mentioned you're 55 years old. How long have you been motorcycling, been on two wheels?
Since I was about 4 or 5.
Okay. I'm going to assume that's a little bit of dirt action back in the day.
Yeah, mostly dirt, little mini bikes. And, you know, okay. And then I did actually have a little 50cc street bike before the Yamaha had the YSR. Suzuki had a little, I believe it was a QR50. And
QR50. I might have to look that up.
It was a little bike, had cruiser. It was more of a cruiser style bike. So,
okay.
But it was fun. Wound up putting knobbies on it and turning it into a little off-road machine. But
there you go.
Yeah. And then I got, you know, the full motocross bikes, went with KX80. Mm-hmm. And I'm a fairly small guy, so an 80cc bike was really tall for me. even I currently go into a dealership and I can't sit on an 80cc and touch the ground. It's hilarious to me. I'm like,
they are
crazy.
Dirt bikes are tall.
Yeah.
They're very tall.
Yeah, it's same thing with an ADV. It's like it's not something that I can even think about hopping on and being comfortable with. So they're just so tall, so far off the ground. It's like, and I don't believe in lowering a bike. So
yeah, I've been there before. I've got the similar vertically challenged syndrome, as they call it. And you know, when I took my Aprilia in to get the suspension adjusted, and I asked the guy, I was like, "Is there any way that I can get this thing lowered?" Like I want to stay, you know, geometrically and whatever else good for the bike, but I don't know how I'm supposed to ride it, man. And I was still riding it on the street at that point. So, you know, I was thinking about stopping at stop signs and stoplights and whatever. And he said I could take, he said that the math actually asked for, you know, 10 mil out the front and 4 or 5 in the back. And I was like, well, that'll help something. So, I made those adjustments. It didn't actually end up doing a whole lot. Turns out a couple millimeters is not much, but
right.
Okay. So we, you know, we started out with a sweet little Suzuki QR50. I know there were other bikes in there, but I'm pretty caught up on that one. And then did some dirt biking. When was the first time you saw asphalt or, you know, started what essentially just give me a quick kind of rundown timeline, key points between, I started out on a dirt bike when I was 4 and now I'm racing motorcycles at 55. And I understand there's got to be a pretty big story in there somewhere.
We can dumb it down a little bit or narrow it down to, I was lucky enough to grow up in the North Monterey County area, which, if you know, Monterey is home to Laguna Seca. So
okay, yep.
I spent from probably age 9 to 13 or 14 going and seeing superbike races at Laguna Seca every year.
Okay.
Met Eddie Lawson, hung out with him, met all of the, you know, Kenny Roberts, all those guys, met them all in the paddock. It was really cool.
That's awesome.
And so I was like, okay, that's what I want to do. I want to do that. And my parents said, no, you're not going to do that. So that was pretty much the end of that for pretty much a long, long time. You know, had you know, kids and family and stuff. And time went on. Didn't even have a bike for a while. Wanted one, but didn't have one.
Okay.
Got back into it, and it just kind of, I was being an idiot and doing street Rossi crap, and
as one does, you know, people do that. It's okay.
Yes, and well, I mean, it's now at this point in my career, I'm embarrassed by it because it's like I knew now. I tell everybody don't do it, so it's like
yeah,
it's like so weird. But so I was doing that stuff, and I had a little boo-boo in a canyon. It was just, I rode the bike off the road and, you know, the bike tumbled, I tumbled, I rode the bike home. And I figured out that I went through a minefield of debris and got very lucky that I didn't actually contact any of it because there was, if you know, fencing or anything, what T-stakes are, there was, those little T-stakes were out in this area that I crashed through.
Okay.
And so there was a down telephone pole. So, I mean, there was just rocks and stuff I could have hit and large rocks. So,
right.
Like a boulder. So I was like, okay, this could have been really bad. I need to maybe rethink what I'm doing. And that bike happened to get totaled. So
what was the bike? Just
that was the first gen YZF R3.
Okay. All right.
So a 2015 R3. That was my first new bike. I had a little clunker before that, but that's the one that counts. So the R3 got totaled, got the new bike, had it for a few months, and I stumbled onto a track day, went to the track, and this was like, okay, that's it. This is the place.
It's life.
The street does not, there's no comparing, you know?
If, right.
So, I mean, I know so, Taylor the Dragon looks beautiful. I want to go ride it just because it looks pretty. I don't want to go ride it because it looks like a place I can drag my knee.
Right.
it's a different mindset for me. I mean, I go to the racetrack to scratch that itch. And when I ride a bike on the street or in a canyon or something, it's actually for pleasure, for the beauty in the environment that I'm in.
Yeah. No, I mean, I absolutely get that. I don't ride it much anymore because the roads out here are, well, some people might hate me for this one, but I don't think they're as pretty as the West Coast. And I spent a few years in Washington, and that was beautiful riding, right? And so I bought myself a cruiser once I started doing track days, bought a little Harley Sportster just so I could, like you're saying, you know, go still enjoy the road. But You mentioned you stumbled upon a track day. I want to kind of crack that egg open and what did that experience look like? How does one stumble on a track day?
Facebook post.
Okay.
Somebody posted up that they weren't able to attend and they were going to basically get rid of their ticket for $100. Okay. And I sent him a message and he said, okay. So I Venmo'd him $100. He sent a message to the track day company. They emailed me. I had my pass.
And so, okay. And what track was that one at? Your first one there?
I went to Thunderhill West for my first track.
Ooh.
So, ooh, and that's actually that little track right there. That's Thunderhill West.
Yeah. Let's see. Let's see. If I can remember turn one, big long turn two, maybe.
Yep. That's up there on that loop up top.
Yep.
There. That's
okay.
Turn two. Yep.
Yep. And then you come, you get the off camber and then, yeah. Okay. All right. It's all coming back. Well, so oh man.
That's the 2 mile side. That was the first track I did. Then with the same track day company, I signed up for a weekend event and I went out and on the east track and the first lap that we weren't under yellow, I promptly crashed turn five. So
okay.
And that was my first open session. Like my first lap that I had nobody right in front of me and I just sent it through the corner. It was like, oh, all bad. No clue what I was doing. I just send it through, just go as fast as you can. And the result was pick the bike up off the ground and not ride the rest of the day. My wife
can't happen there.
Rented me a bike from a company called Feel Like a Pro. And they rented Ninja 400. So I rented a Ninja 400 for the next day. And so I was able to ride.
Now, okay.
This was my second track day, or technically my third track day, because I crashed on Saturday. So my third track day, I went from C group, got bumped to B. After I crashed, I got bumped to B, and the coach wanted to move me to A, and I said no. So I was like, no, I'm not ready for that. I just had a boo-boo. Not even close to ready for that. I didn't think I was ready for B. And then right. I went and I did another track day. And then the summer break came, or the winter break, excuse me, came. And I had decided at that point that I was going to get my race license. And I started emailing the American Federation of Motorcyclists, the AFM, to start racing. And then I had contact with them and they actually got me a mentor. And so I had somebody that helped me out in my first couple of races. Actually, he helped me out my whole first season, so I'm not going to say he didn't help me out. Mark McKinney helped me a lot. So thank you for that, Mark. And so it was a really good experience. I got into it. I got my race license at Button Willow. The first time I had ever ridden Button Willow was my new racer school, basically. And so I had to go do my new racer school, be evaluated on a track I'd never ridden and compete in the first race ever. So mission was accomplished. I only entered one race that weekend because the whole goal was just walk away with the license.
There you go.
Some of my buddies had some mechanicals and stuff like that, and they actually didn't get their license that first round.
Oof.
So yeah, it's like just things happen, you know, one guy crashed, another guy had a mechanical. So just again, being stubborn, sort of just staying with it. You know, you're out there, just finish. It wasn't about being fast that day. It was about finishing.
Yeah. Yeah. Usually that's how the NRC works. Generally, if you don't do anything super stupid and you can keep the bike up, you're going to get a license. After that, you got to learn how to go fast to keep up. But for the NRC. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. It's like, cool, you can say you won your new racer school race, but it's kind of like, cool.
Yeah.
You know, now we're going to go race, you know? I mean,
yeah.
To me, it's just the rite of passage almost. You just have to complete it. Get the green, go green, get the checkered, go home.
Yep.
So I did that, and then it's just been going since. So my first race was... with the AFM in 2021.
Okay. All right. So yeah, you've been cooking for a minute. So you said, let's see, if I'm getting this correct, it was after that second weekend, your third track day, and you decided at that point, nope, I'm gonna race.
Yeah.
So it was pretty early on. Okay. I know there's a
I had always wanted to race, even back to when I was a kid. So the urge was there.
Right.
The time and the availability to do it had never been there before. And then all of a sudden, just like all the stars aligned or something.
Yeah. Yep. All the pieces aligned or start. Yeah. Yeah. Your analogy is much better than mine.
That's
all right. So in that, what bike were we on for race weekend? First
that
race
was
weekend.
A 2020 YZF R3.
Okay, so still on the R3 at that point. Okay. Yeah. Is that what you're still racing today? Or
I am still on an R3 now. Actually, was texting with Ken Hill the other day, and he asked me what my plans were if I was staying on the R3 or if I was changing bikes. And the thought was I wanted to change. I thought maybe doing hooligans or something might be fun. It's just cost prohibitive for me. So the R3 is affordable. And I'm still having a lot of fun. I'm winning. That's a different part. and I haven't, the bike still has more that I haven't gotten out of it. So I don't see why I don't even think I'm 90%. I think the bike has more available than what I have in me. And so if I can get that the other direction, then I might get bored with it, but I don't think I'm going to get bored.
There you go.
It's I can afford to put the bike on the track, which means I get way more track time than somebody that can only afford to buy one rear tire and call it a season,
Yeah.
I used one front tire from 2023 through 2024, and I could probably still run that tire.
Man, so, that's nuts.
That's one front. I used three new rear tires and two takeoffs for the entire 2024 season.
Wow.
And I do a lot of riding.
Yeah, that's impressive. Compared to the leader bike boys out there, that is the biggest tempt for me to pick up a smaller bike is just that tire cost. I've seen guys run through six tires in a weekend on a leader bike. In club racing, that's not to mention catch the guys heading out to Moto America, then that's an entire different story. But and then I caught a guy. He was on a KTM 390, and I was just at a track day, and I asked him, I'm like, how'd you like it? It was one of the platforms I was looking at, and he's like, oh, dude, I love it. I was like, okay, well, that's cool. And he's like, you won't believe how much cheaper it is. And I was like, well, yeah, the bike, the price is definitely cheaper. He's like, no, I've been on this tire for 6 months. And I've done at least two track days a month and a couple of races and there or something like that. I might be fudging those numbers a little, but it was just amazing to me. But I was going to say, you mentioned you're not even at 90%, and you're winning. So that's a pretty good spot to be. If you think you still have, 10 or 12% to pull out of the bike
definitely does. Like, I can just look at my lap time and know that the bike's got about 4 more seconds depending on what track I'm looking at than I'm capable of right now. So, so it's just, I the bike is better than I am at this point. I want it to stay ahead of me a little bit, but I'm not getting everything the bike has. So until I get to that point, it's still challenging. Right. So
yeah,
I'm looking at my data and I see like, oh man, I could go through there much quicker, or I can be like, oh geez, I overslowed way back there. I should have waited, whatever.
Right. Let's see. You mentioned in the little bio that I read, and I'm on your website right now actually, but Tip In Racing.
Yes.
Which I have to be honest, weeks ago when I first read that, I thought it was someone's last name. I didn't quite get the tip in part.
Well, but to do anything on a motorcycle, especially at the track, if you're riding around the track, you're always thinking of me. You're always tipping in. So
there. Ooh, all right.
Chicken racing.
All right, there you go. Yeah, that's pretty good. I like that. Always.
I know. I was surprised it was still out there. It came out of my head. I don't know how.
So what, you know, give me the big picture. What is tip in racing? What's the point? What's the gig?
To save lives. That's the bottom line, is to get people to be safer on the street. I do a lot of coaching with street riders to help make them more aware of what they're doing. Sometimes a lot of people don't understand. They just think this is a fun thing. It's recreation. Mm-hmm. And they overlook the consequences that go along with the sport.
Okay.
Whether they're on the street or on the track, the consequences are important, that we have to acknowledge them and train to mitigate them.
Right. So you say you do a lot of training with street riders. What are you, like, we doing parking lot drills?
We do parking lot drills, lead follows through canyons, group rides where I'll slow down and back up and evaluate from the back and then pass and come up through the group, to getting those same people to come to the track and then take their, what we've been practicing in the canyons, to another level and a different understanding. Because basically what we do at the track versus the street is degree of application. So on the track, I really get off the bike. On the street, I'm going to get off a little bit because I'm not going to carry that same amount of lean angle.
Yep.
Right. So I'm going to, it's just less. I ride the bike virtually the same way. It's just to a lesser degree. I just don't move as much. I don't wait as long to break. I mean, you ride it to be safe. And just teach a lot of people just the lane position stuff.
Okay.
Like everybody knows number two, when you're a kid, that's caca, poo poo, right? That's the bad stuff. So number two is the middle of the road. So stay out of the poop. You know, I see a lot of people ride dead center down the road, because to them, they feel like they have space away from the cars on either side. And I get that.
Well, and it's just for argument's sake. I mean, it's natural when you're putting your car in a lane, you want to put your car in the middle of the lane.
Yes. Yes, you do. Except in a car, your wheel tracks are on the outside of it, not in the middle. Yeah. So we take a chance of running through most of the debris, most of the oil and or any liquids are typically in the middle. Conversely, I would say that we can't say you never ride in the middle of the road, because if there's a log in number one lane position, by all means, if the middle is clear, ride through it.
Yeah.
So, I mean, that's
a log would be, I've never come across that, but yeah.
I mean, you know, maybe not a big log, maybe it's more of a stick, but it's something in your way that you don't want to run over. On the racetrack, that could be, you know, a clip on.
No, there was actually when I was at Thunder Hill, it's actually the only time, there was a chain coming into turn two, and it was like, right, I guess it was just outside of the race line, but it was the first time I had seen the red and yellow flag let you know there was some
hard parts, something on the ground.
Yep, and I looked and it looked like a snake, and I was like, that's not a snake.
Sometimes it'll come out like that at first for a snake, and then when somebody hits it, they put out the green and black for wet debris.
Interesting. Okay, I've never seen
it. Yeah. It's a bad joke.
No.
Okay. You squish the snake. Edit that out.
No, you're good. Man, I was about to add that to my list of flags. I've got a running list of
we do have a black and green that's striped like the red and yellow.
Interesting.
And it's for wet conditions.
Okay.
So out here we do a red and yellow is for hard parts, hard debris. Like a rock, something like that on the track. And if it's wet, the other one, we call it the pickle flag.
Okay.
So it doesn't mean get lunch, but it's the pickle flag.
You know,
Mr. Augie Weber's line.
Yeah. To go back to your joke, a run over snake, I think it could warrant the pickle flag.
Yeah. It's wet pickles. Debris now, right? Yeah. might be slippery. I don't know. I've seen a few at Thunder Hill. I've seen a few hanging out like right at an apex. And I've been like, what would happen if you like low sided in a corner and there was one just hanging out on the outside and you slid through it, you know?
Yeah.
Like, boy, I hope my leathers are thick enough. Like,
that's what I'm saying. I was going to say it'd be an interesting trip to the hospital. You know, it started out as a motorcycle crash, ended up being a rattlesnake bite or something.
All of a sudden, they're medevacking you for a rattlesnake bite. Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, man. Can't say I've ever run into that issue, and I don't wish it upon anyone. But if anyone has any stories on that, please share them below in the comments. I want to hear about it. I don't want to say that would be awesome, but I don't know what other term to. It'd be an interesting story. Quite eventful.
A couple years ago, I could probably find it if I dug hard enough. Maybe I'll email it to you afterwards somehow. There's a picture of, I can't remember the kid's name, but he was at Button Willow and he's like elbow dragging around a corner and there's a tarantula on the track walking like right past where it's like his elbows that's inches from this. It's just a great pick. So
that's awesome.
I just wonder if there's like a picture out there of somebody with a snake striking at him or something. That would be pretty crazy.
Oh, man.
Did you see the snake going after the tire or something? That'd be wicked. Be terrifying at the same time. A whole new level of danger.
Yeah, I can't say I would enjoy. Yeah. You know, let's just stick to motorcycles on the track. The snakes can stay on the outside.
Way outside, please. Way outside.
Very far out there, because I can't imagine that snake skin is too good. Yeah. Yeah.
Stay clear of the impact zone and we're fine.
Oh. Anyway, well, so to talk a little bit more about tip-in racing, how many people do you think you get convinced? Because I find it hard. I have quite a few friends that ride motorcycles out on the street, and I keep telling them, I'm like, hey, just come to a track day. Like, it's that simple. Just show up. It's a couple $100. You need some gear. Yep, you got to buy the gear. But most of the time, I just keep getting excuse after excuse and reason after reason. And I'm a big believer in, like, it doesn't matter what bike you have. It doesn't matter your skill level. Doesn't, you know, nothing matters. It's a track day. If you're going to race, that's a little bit of a different story. You know, that
different animal.
Yep. But if you're just doing a track day, I think that anyone that has a motorcycle is invited and can enjoy a track day. And it's a place where you take the safety and turn it way up, because there's no traffic. There's no, well, we just talked about snakes and tarantulas, but there's less animals on the track. Less debris out there. You know, racetracks care about their roads being, or the track being clean, as opposed to a road is just a road.
Right.
And different things like that. So I'm just kind of curious how successful you are over a tip in racing with how many people you'd say that you can convert
for
or
2024,
bring in.
2024, I brought right around 35 riders, new riders to the track.
Okay.
Some of them weren't in California. Some people I've talked to just via Instagram and just encouraged them to go experience it. And they've been like, oh my God, I can't believe that I was, you know, afraid of doing this. There's so many myths and so much misinformation. Yeah. And it's like, don't listen to your buddy if he doesn't do track days.
Yeah.
If you were looking for information about a track day, email the track day providers. I mean, they're the ones that'll tell you what your bike needs. Cause I've heard everything from you have to have brand new tires and brand new brakes and the bike has to have safety wire to only certain types of bikes are allowed. And you have to have race boots, race gloves, a race type helmet. And like, it's like, no, if most, not all, but several providers will allow you to ride in C group in textile gear that zips together, right?
Yep.
some that don't. If it's leather and zips together, you're good. We have providers that have loaner gear. They will give you gear.
Right.
So as you're saying, all you hear is excuses. As I hear their excuses, I eliminate it. I scratch it. So I don't have leathers. Okay, I can get you loaner leathers. No problem. Oh, I don't have boots. I can get you boots too. No problem. What else? Oh, I don't have a way to get my bike there. Can you rent a U-Haul trailer? Yes. Okay. You rent the U-Haul, I'll tow it. Done.
There you go.
What's your excuse?
Yeah.
Right. Well, I don't have very much experience. Well, funny story. My wife had no experience on a motorcycle, learned how to ride around our block. And the next weekend we were at Thunder Hill West where she learned how to actually ride.
So yep.
Brand new, knew how to shift, turn left, sort of, and turn right, sort of. And we took her to the track and like a natural.
Yeah. Well, that's what's crazy about it. Is that, you know, I don't know how to ride that well. One is very interesting. That is a very opinion based, statement. And then two, you know, the success stories I have heard, and obviously you have personally with, people that almost learn on the track. Mm-hmm. It's kind of impressive. It's crazy. And yeah, you're absolutely right. The you know, I was just going to mention, not to self-advertise too much, but JK Moto Entertainment, the YouTube channel, is solely based around trying to get information to the people about how easy it is to actually go do a track day and what it actually takes. And then, you know, I'd try and be very careful with what is actually required and what people will tell you, and then what you should go look at yourself, because some orgs are a little different. You know, not every org will allow you to use textile gear, but in my experience, many will. Absolutely.
Especially typically in the lowest, whatever their structure is, 1, 2, 3, yeah. ABC, whatever it is.
Yeah.
The novice group, the entry level people typically can be allowed.
Yeah. Again, yeah. And our, you know, provider. Yeah. Our old co-host Cole, he actually, his first track day, he showed up in textile gear, you know, and absolutely zero issue with that. I have seen bikes all the way from your full spec race bike to a KLR 650 to Harley Davidson Street Glide with bags still on it. So
a couple of years back, we actually had two city police officers that brought their police bikes out, and so they were playing chase with their lights and sirens and stuff, so it was kind of fun.
That's a oof.
That's unnerving, man. I'm not supposed to get a speeding ticket.
Yeah, that's what I was gonna say. I don't know if I can condone that one, because usually I'm telling people like, yeah, there's no cops either, you don't have to worry about it. But
right but it was a couple of the racers are actually moto cops, so they brought their bikes out once. It was just really cool. It was fun to watch.
That is cool. And, you know, luckily you've got your mirrors taped up or removed anyway on a track day. So
yeah,
don't have to worry about seeing the lights in the rear view.
Yeah, not seeing them anyway. Not paying no attention. They're there behind me. They don't count. Only at the track.
Yeah.
Don't run.
So talk to me a little bit about, you know, that's tip-in racing. We do some rider development and support, both out on the street and then trying to get those people to the track. You also mentioned the 411 program.
Yeah, what Racer 411 is actually, I put on the right hat. we went to basically the owners of CRA and said, you know, there's like no mentoring or no help for the brand new racers. And they said, well, what do you have in mind? And we were like, well, racers helping racers, you know, we can take our experience and help them kind of get through the steps of like their first, try to help them get rid of some of the nerves, take some of the stress off of their first weekend. Or if they want to pit with us all season, that they're more than welcome. I mean, we've done things, one round we had to change a clutch out one night. So we didn't have stands for this guy's, or we didn't have oil for this guy's bike, because he didn't have any, we didn't have what he needed. So we laid the bike down on blankets and pulled the engine case off and did the clutch with the bike laying on its side so we didn't have to waste the oil. Okay. Yeah, that was an interesting
Hang on. We're not going to gloss over that. we got a pause.
We didn't lay it all the way flat. We tilted it just far enough and had it on blankets so the fairing didn't get messed up, so that we didn't leak a bunch of oil on the ground and have to have oil for him. He was a track day rider that was there on the Friday before the race weekend that got talked into doing new racer school and actually said, okay, I'll race. And so then we had to scramble to make that bike a race bike.
Right.
It was his street bike. And we literally went through and safety wired and did everything as best we could to get him through tech the next day.
Okay.
And his clutch also was slipping and he had happened to have one. And so we installed a new clutch. So, I think he won his second race after his clubman race. I believe he won.
There you go. All right. I mean, I'm not. You know, I wasn't trying to hate on the laying the bike down. I just I've never heard anyone doing that. It makes sense.
Last year, one of my riders, low sided, and he didn't have the spacer for the shift shaft on the Ninja 400. So the shift shaft got knocked inside the transmission. And so I couldn't quite get it to line back up. So he held the bike, leaned over again, because we had just done an oil change. He didn't want to spend the money on the oil. So he held the bike for 10 minutes while I pulled the case cover off and did the work.
Well, there you go.
Sometimes you got to do things unconventionally, but, we're also a bunch of broke folks, so you know, $50 in oil, it hurts if you know, got to get rid of it before it's time.
Yeah, no, absolutely. You know, it's definitely not a cheap sport. That's awesome. As far as this bike, the street bike turned into race bike overnight. What else did that process look like? You know, you mentioned new clutch,
safety wiring. We had to put a clutch on. We had to install a shark fin, a lever guard, do a hose clamp / safety wire for the oil filter.
Yep. Okay. I'm just curious about the belly.
Disable his lights, because he actually had lights. So we had to disable the tail lights, cover up the red so it wasn't red off the back of the bike.
Okay.
Mirrors gone. He was pretty much a street stock.
Yeah.
So, but he's famous now. So,
hey, that's awesome. No, that's huge. That's sweet. Oh man, laid the bike over on blankets. I'm gonna pass that one on. I mean, passing it here on that.
I think I can even send you some of that. I'll send you an email with pictures of that.
Okay.
I might have like a little video type of thing that shows that process, how, you know, like time lapse of how that kind of went. So
yeah, awesome. Awesome. Yeah. Awesome.
Yeah,
sweet. So
just giving back to the paddock is what we're all about. And having fun. If you're not having fun, then stay home.
Yeah, when you're not making money doing it, you know, when you're spending your money doing it, you should probably have some fun in there. That's my number one rule, you know, is that I'm not sponsored. I'm not making any money. I'm not a professional. And so if I don't enjoy it, there's no point in doing it. So
exactly. It goes through all levels of the sport, whether you're an official, a corner worker, or whatever. If it's not bringing you joy, go find something that's going to bring you joy, because this is supposed to be fun, and especially club racing. It's passion driven, right? And it seems to be dying. So we need to cultivate that. And if we have a bunch of grumpy people that are around, they're going to chase off these people that want to come in and have fun.
Absolutely. So, yeah.
It's just, and again, the sport has consequences, so you can't overlook the consequences, but again, it's I'll accept the consequences because I'm having fun. If I wasn't having fun, there's no way I would risk everything. Basically, every time you go out, every time you leave your house, you're risking everything. So if you get down to it, but you get on a bike and you purposely are now going as fast as you can go, there's risk. And so we try to mitigate that through training and understanding what control to use at what corner and what type of corner am I coming up to. Just understanding the fundamentals of the sport. And there's a lot of people who don't know that.
So when it comes to mitigating risk, I think, you know, that's the original reason you reached out to me was I posted something about crashing on track days. So talk to me about your, you mentioned you have had and crash on a track day. I believe it was your second track day. And then I'm going to assume not again since.
I had one boo-boo my first year racing as a novice at Las Vegas Motor Speedway. And it was like either just before or just after that I had reached out to Ken Hill and started working with him. And I went back, I analyzed what happened in Vegas. It was all me. Mm-hmm. I got greedy with the corner and I got the rear tire up on the paint, and Las Vegas paint is not grippy. Anybody go in there? It's very slippery, and the rear tire on my R3 spun up and down it went. And so we went sliding down the track, and just a simple low side, and picked the bike up, checked it out. I shaved off a foot peg.
Yeah.
Okay. Two more days to be there. So I patched the bike up, moved the shift peg that was shaved over to the brake side and the brake side to the other side. So I had the one I needed. And then went and rode the bike the next 2 days, and then took video and sent it to Ken, and basically got my head taken out of my ass and learned how to do this sport.
Okay.
This sport's full of a lot of egos, and because I know everybody's gonna be like, I know how to do it, I know what I'm doing, and I that's why when I reached out to you on that message, I reached out privately,
right?
I don't like the get beat up online because of my opinion, which is I don't believe you need to crash, and crashing should not be an accepted part of this sport, because you can learn how to ride the bike and not crash. You can learn how to become an adjustable rider through being trained by somebody that actually has done it. Somebody that has a proven track record, not just anybody. And I mean, there's lots of schools out there, and there's lots of different ways of getting to the point in the sport that you want.
Mm-hmm.
So find the voice that works for you, but make sure that voice is qualified to be a voice and not just some guy in a forum that's telling you that you can't use your brakes when you're going through a corner, because I hear that all the time. And it's like, dude, I got pictures of my fingers on the brakes and my knees touching the ground. So what are you talking about? I mean, I'm at full lean and I got fingers on brake pressure. So come on.
Yeah. And then immediately back on gas.
Exactly. There's not a lot of coasting. We do have our neutral throttle times, you know, which we're not accelerating or slowing, but it's understanding, like you've heard the statement, smooth is fast, right? So if motor controls how you operate the bike is smooth and done with purpose, everything else kind of just works out. It kind of happens. If I know I have a left turn coming up, I'm not waiting until I'm in my brake zone to set my body. My body's done, out of the way. That box is checked, right?
Right.
I see my brake zone. My fingers are ready for to go. From when the throttle closes, I'm to the brakes. I'm not applied yet, but I'm to them so that I can build my pressure to whatever level that's going to be for that particular corner radius. So build up my pressure, into the corner we go. You know, most bikes turn better on the brakes. So,
yeah, 100%.
I mean, and even saying brakes, sometimes that can just be a partial roll off because that's still a purposeful slowing of the bike. To me, that's still, in essence, you're still attempting to slow. So that's braking.
Yeah.
Working with Kenny, he really got on me about using my eyes, moving my eyes. That's a big thing. And I'll use the Nick Ionach quote. That's the, you know, target fixation is a good thing if you're fixated on the right target. Because if you think about it, I ride from target to target around the track.
Yeah, no, 100%. I mean, your bike follows your head and your head follows your eyes. Yeah. So if you got your eyes in the right place, you will.
Just need to keep your eyes active.
Yeah. That's lazy
with our eyes.
Absolutely. That's the hardest part. I used to have to force myself, and even still, I'll be mid corner and realize I'm still staring at the apex I'm about to hit and be like, oh, okay, it's time to move on. Pick those up and move somewhere else. And that, you know, the eyes really, perception and where your eyes are, I feel is like, I feel that that is where some of the most speed actually is, honestly, is who is moving their eyes the quickest.
If you can't see where you're driving, you won't drive.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. If I can't see where I'm going, I'm not going to roll the throttle wide open.
Right.
It's hard to convince yourself to do that if you don't know the direction correctly yet. So that's why we want to have our bike placement correct, because then we can have a blind spot and roll into the power because we put the bike in the right spot. Now that's for the track, not the street.
Yeah.
The track is we can look at the map and we're going to go around and around the same thing.
Yep.
At the street, it's completely different. Stay outside till you can see the exit, then go down to your apex if number two section of the lane is clear. If it's got rocks, wait.
Yeah. I mean, the street is definitely a different
concept, right?
Definitely a different animal out there. I would say you 100% should be able to see where you're going before you pick that bike up and go. So,
it's at the track. Like I said, we know where we're going. We know if there's debris on the ground because somebody's going to throw us a flag out there and show us what's going on. So it's a much freer riding environment. So I can omit the focus that I need for the street of, is there a dog running out? Well, that flagger, I just need to pay attention to, I need to see that and know whether I've got danger or not. I don't have to be scanning for every little thing coming at me. I need to be aware of my surroundings, yes, but I don't have to be hunting for that danger all the time. I've got help in looking for it.
Well, and that's that's probably one of the nicest parts is that you get to the racetrack and you are truly able to just ride the bike in every aspect. It really opens up. And once again, that's why I personally preach that any bike, I don't care what you're on, you will enjoy it because you are finally
go-kart track.
Yeah.
If you own a Grom or a little bike like that, go to the go-kart track. Thunderhill West will allow a 125. So a Grom can be on that track.
There you go.
My first track day on that West track, I got passed by a Grom and even had video evidence. Pissed me off. Talk about kicking the proverbial, you know, downstairs area. That was like, are you kidding me?
Yeah.
Zoomed right on by.
All right. You know, I've had my fair share of, I'm a little younger, and definitely had my fair share of people your age or older. On Ninja 300s or R3s zooming past me, and I'm like, well, okay. So I always laugh at the guy that can floor it on the straight, and then you find him again two corners later, no problem.
Like, so don't be envious of us. Just go, you'll be that guy someday. That's all. Just follow in the footsteps. Just look at what we're doing. We're still doing it, right?
I mean,
this sport has a history of chewing people up and spitting them out, and people get into this sport and out within 3 to 4 years.
Yep.
racing at least 2 to 3 years typically is about it. And they implode because they can't afford it. They go big and then they no more money or whatever. They get injured and that's it. So I want to do this for a long time. I've waited a long time to do this. So right. I can't afford to pay the consequence of a whoops. Yeah. So I do everything I can to not have that happen. So that's why I don't believe that it should be even a thought of, oh, go to the track and I'm going to crash. What are you talking about? I don't wake up in the morning and think, oh boy, I hope I stubbed my toe on the table today. I mean, that's like, come on, don't put that stuff out there in the universe for it to come back and get you.
Yeah, you know? No, that is a good point. Well, and that's the video that sparked our conversation here and the message that you sent me. I was searching for real life data, because I've been, you know, I made it probably 12 track days before I put a bike down, and I put a bike down 100%. I was chasing speed through a corner where realistically there wasn't that much time to be saved, but I thought, you know, I could add 5 more miles per hour in this corner. And then while I was doing that, I was like, I could add more lean angle too. And yeah, anyway, I was doing some dumb things and I paid for it. That was pretty far into my track day career, if you will. Mm-hmm. And on the contrary, I've had two buddies that I went with that both crashed on their first ever track day. And so, you know, I think, the Facebook page Track Day Addicts, someone had gotten on there and said, I don't do track days yet, but what is the likelihood that I crash? And I realized that I had no real information on that, and I didn't know if that statistic had really been made yet. So I did a quick Google search. You know, I got on, said, what's the likelihood or how long does it take? And I couldn't really find anything, so I just asked the question. I said, hey, on average, you know, for everyone out here, give me your number. And then I ended up putting that in a spreadsheet. And what I found was around 9.5 to 10 track days on average before someone crashes a motorcycle. With some interesting stories in there. You have people doing up to 82 track days without ever crashing. And then obviously a lot of people crashing on their first ever. But yeah, I mean, I totally agree that I never went to a track. Racing, track day, whatever it might be, I never showed up and said, yeah, I'm gonna wreck today.
Exactly.
And so I see why the hesitancy to put out that you don't think it should be part of the sport. He's definitely gonna get some backlash on that. I think that I would even argue there is a point where if you truly want to find the bike's limit 100%, you do have to go over it, I think. But the reality is that most people in even the highest level of club racing and maybe even up the chain in Moto America, most people are not anywhere near that 100% limit of the bike. And so, no, you do not need to wreck the bike to find the limit. All you're finding is your own personal ability limit rather than the bike limit itself. So I think to put that all in like short words, if you get to a professional level where the bikes are changing every year, you're on brand new equipment, it might take wrecking a bike to find that limit because you are truly riding at 100% the edge. And you want to be literally at that 99.9. For most of us,
as you mentioned, sharp end for sure.
Yeah, right. For most of us, as you mentioned, you know, you've still got 10% or more of your bike left. There's no need. You don't need to step over 100% because you're not stepping over 100% of the bike. As I just mentioned, you're probably stepping over 100% of yourself. So
exactly. I once heard Josh Herron tell a guy, I don't remember if it's a video or if it actually happened at the track day I was at. And I can't remember. A guy asked him that he had purchased. This is when Josh was riding for BMW. Mm-hmm. And the guy had purchased a S1K RR, you know, super bike, and said that Josh asked him what he wanted to get out of the coaching. And he said, I want to be able to get 100% out of that bike. And Josh laughed. He said, I can't get 100% out of that bike. So if you've got a guy that's been racing motorcycles literally since he was 6 years old, telling you he can't get the illusion out of your head that yeah. you're ever going to go to the store as a street guy, buy an S1K RR, and actually be anywhere near as proficient as somebody that has actually taken the time to invest in themselves to get fast and be safe. Not the bike is what's fast, because I pass a lot of R1s on track days.
Yep.
Come play in the technical sides of the track where your horsepower will expose your weaknesses. Is horsepower hides poor riding.
Oh, so, yeah. Yeah. That's why I've got a leader bike, to be honest.
Well, you get off of that, you get on a bike you can afford, you'll go to the track more.
Yeah.
I mean, I am an advocate for the little bike just because it's an affordability thing for me. And I look at the kids that I work with on the street.
Mm-hmm.
Most of them are single. A couple of them are starting families, and that really hampers them having, you know, a $500 or $600 a month bike payment because they bought the 1000, and then now they can't afford to even ride the bike because, oh crap, they need a rear tire and that's going to cost them $300. So between the bike payment, the insurance that's $500 a month, like this, they can't use it. Yeah. And then they don't know how to use it and they just do freeway rips. It's just like, I just go to the drag strip and drag race it then.
Yeah.
If you have a sport bike, it's meant to be in the twisties and not the twisties on the street. I mean, that's the only reason why we have that fancy stuff on the street is so they can race it.
Yeah. Yeah.
So
true.
Nobody true. Needs a 1000 on the street. You can have them. Go for it. I love everybody that buys them because thank you. You support the sport. But yep. It's kind of a worthless tool for the job. If I'm commuting, unless I'm just twisting the throttle going down I-5, which people in California know what I'm talking about. It's just a long, straight freeway.
Yeah. You know? Yeah, well, that is the hard part. You know, you mentioned thank you, and I agree. We are the people buying the leader bikes out there are keeping sport alive, even if they are dumping them 2 weeks later. Hopefully, they're just buying more at that point. But
yeah, I'm hoping they're not, you know, removing themselves from the gene pool.
Yeah. Yeah, but it's a tough life. And honestly, the leader bikes are kind of going the way of the rest of the world anyway, so.
Yeah, they are, but I mean the R9 seems to be doing pretty good things right now. So I don't know, testing wise, I've seen some little blurbs that it's putting down numbers comparison to the R6.
So, there we go. Yeah, so I mean that's what I was hoping for. I will 100% miss the days of the inline four screamers is what I'd like
Kawasaki
to call them.
Kawasaki hasn't let go of it yet.
Yeah. Yeah, we'll see.
I mean, you know, Yamaha MotoGP level is supposed to be, you know, developing a V4. So, you know, who knows if that'll trickle down to us.
Yeah. Yeah, we'll see.
That'd be interesting.
We will see. It'll definitely be, man, it'll be something else. I'll be more interested to see, you know, World Superbike has to follow the street rules. So we get 2027, yeah. We get the new MotoGP rules and
BMW is not real happy right now. They their concessions were taken away.
Ooh, okay.
We won the championship, no more concessions. So
yeah,
they like had some special chassis or something, and like World Superbike said, no, you can't use that.
Yeah. So
whoops. Yeah, that's what happens when you put the best rider on your bike and he wins.
Yeah, it is wild. Oh. All right. Well, I think I am about out of questions, and to be completely honest with everyone, mostly you, but also with the audience, it is getting a little late here, and I do have work tomorrow. But,
oh, that is terrible.
Yeah. Yeah, that's how it goes. Gotta buy tires somehow.
Yeah, right? So. I hear you. I'm trying to do that with all my hat switching.
Yeah, there we go. Well, hey, speaking of hat switching, you know, before we sign off, do you have any shout-outs, any thanks you want to give?
Oh, I have a lot of them. So, all right, let's go. First off, I want to thank my track wife, Aliki, with Venom Sport. Your help and support has been amazing, and I couldn't be doing this without you. Galfer USA, you guys, best brakes in the business. Thank you for always helping me stop, you know, go fast, brake faster, Galfer. Blood Lubricants, Jeff, you're amazing. Thank you for the support. Vortex Racing, Rhino Power, Motion Pro, Lieto Factory, Driven Racing. Dave Moss Tuning is my suspension guru. Woodcraft Technologies, Forma Boots, Racer 411, CRA, Tech Spec, Ken Hill Coaching, Tyrox, Fun Track Days, Rebel Riders Gym, Total Athlete Care, and most of all, my wife, Kelly Mills.
Awesome.
Thank you very much.
Yeah. And I, you know, I have to extend my own personal thanks. I am not sponsored by any of those companies, but I do appreciate companies that support our riders and our racers, especially the club level and below. They go are huge for keeping the sport alive. And yes, if you weren't doing it, no one else was doing it, I want to be able to do it, because everyone knows that, well, not everyone, but anyway, I know that I cannot afford my own racetrack. So I need people like you, and I need those sponsors. So we definitely appreciate it over here and everywhere. So
yeah, for sure.
All right. Well, hey man, I appreciate you coming back on.
Of course.
And joining us. This has been great. Before we fully sign off, where can we find you so people can go check you out if they want, if they're down in that California area?
We're on Instagram, YouTube, which would just be Tip In Racing. So pretty much everything. If you look up Tip In Racing, you'll find me. We have a website, tipinracing.com, where we do coaching, some help with bike repair and stuff like that, get you ready for the track, some mentoring and stuff like that. So if you need help or you just want to go to the track and you're in Northern California, hit me up. I will help you get there.
Awesome. All right. Sweet. Well, yeah. So hit up Aunt Lee down at Tippin Racing, or over at Tippin Racing. Anyway, we'll have a link down in the description. And even if you don't hit him up and you're thinking about going to the track, just do it. It is worth it. Yep. And we will leave you on that note. Thank you everyone for listening. We will see you guys in the next episode.
On the ground at 100 miles an hour.